started, Councilmember Duckworth has, you know, just a reminder that if you are going to speak, you can pull your mask down and speak into the microphone, the mask can still muffle your comments. So, work session. I think it's just the.
You do.
Okay. So, value visioning is what's on our agenda tonight, I'm assuming that's what you're here for. All right, so come on up to the microphone and introduce yourself, and then I'll turn the time over to you.
It was working earlier.
Oh, I see it, yeah, this is a new one.
That one or this one? Probably that one, huh?
Perfect.
Okay, thanks, Chandler.
Yep.
My name is Ryan Beck. I am here with Envision Utah to talk about valley visioning. I talked to Mayor Reese. I talked to Chandler a few weeks ago, and they thought it might be a great idea to come just tell a little bit about this valley visioning project to the rest of the council. So thank you for some time for that. Valley Vision is really an effort put on by the Association of Utah County Chambers to take a look at how Utah County might grow and develop. I'm sure you guys all know we feel the growth and development pressures every day that Utah County, the population of Utah County is expected to double by 2050 and add another million by 2065. Now, for the most part, Cedar Valley is built out, so maybe this is, you know, if I was talking to Eagle Mountain, this might be a little bit different conversation, but we did think it was worth coming and just reviewing what we're talking about. So not just the Association of Utah County, we also have some other partners, UBU, BYU, and of course, Envision Utah to one with. But this project's almost been going on for just about 2 years, so I'll do my best to summarize 2 years in 15 minutes. If I gloss over anything, just please slow me down and ask me. But phase one was all about listening, and that's exactly what we did. We went out and we did a whole bunch of workshops, charrette-style workshops. We put maps in front of people. We asked them to place the, where housing might go, where jobs might go. We asked them to draw on the maps, transportation improvements, both public and roads. We did an online survey where we had about 2,800 people weigh in on that survey. And what we heard, this is just one result from that survey, but we asked people to prioritize the following outcomes for Utah County's future. And we heard things like, manage water, improve transportation, reduce air pollution, improve education, create good jobs, housing affordability. All these things, agriculture, really important to Utah County residents. So what we did is we went ahead and we put together experts, topic experts, in the following areas that you can see for housing, transportation, air quality, agriculture, etc., to really focus in and put together scenarios that the public could weigh in on these scenarios. So there's some pictures of the mapping results and people working on the maps. And these are some examples of some of the maps. We identified city centers in the green there that you can see, you know, places where there might be city centers. But I believe looking really closely at Cedar Hill, I don't think anyone identified a city center on the map. But if you look at the Puerto Rico and the yellow on the right side there, that pretty much follows where there's available land. Look at Eagle Mountain, look at South of Provo, lots of available land. And that's where people identified, you know, single family, most quarter acre lots, for example. Roads, you can see, this is a accumulation of 75 maps where people drew roads, this intensity. For the most part, they didn't draw a lot of road improvements on the east side where it was built out. But look at a huge demand, and look at the roads on the left map there, that, you know, a bypass by 15. People are sick of dealing with this I-15 and trying to get back up and down. If we could somehow divert truck traffic and people passing through, maybe St. George, maybe that could help out with I-15 without having to go really wide on I-15 or double stack, which would be an astronomical cost. So Transit on the purple shows a lot more, just like MAG's 2050 plan. Shows a lot of well, double tracking and light rail extensions. So hopefully that's be funding in our future. So phase two is all about scenarios. And we took the information we heard in phase one, we put together in scenarios. We had 11,000 people weigh in on that survey. We did another round of public workshops to try to get input. And I'm just going to share one result, because I could literally bore you for 2 hours showing results, but I'm going to show one result. This question was about how and where we grow, scenarios for how and where we grow. And we had scenario A, we called current conditions, and we based the growth, the 2050 growth, how we grow on the same big, same mix of uses, same lot sizes, as we've been growing for the last 20 years. Scenario B was all about working in centers. We put growth in mixed-use centers near high-capacity transportation. Scenario C was about westward growth from those maps. We heard a lot of people say, hey, we should be growing west into Saratoga, Eagle Mountain, etc. So we put the growth primarily west of the lake in Cedar Valley. Scenario D was about southern growth, where we put growth south. There's water on the ag land up there. A lot of people said preserve that ag land, but a lot of people also said we could grow down there. So we tested that in a scenario. And scenario E was all about urban infill, where we accommodate that growth in existing areas. So these are just some graphics to go along. And I'm really looking at this map in this light yellow. That is existing development, and the darker yellow is new development. So interesting to me, we did a whole bunch of modeling on this for impacts associated with think of things like sewer, water, roads, and the associated cost to go with those. But so scenario A, how much land we use, less land we use in centers. So when people say, talk about their taxes and not wanting to pay more taxes, you guys know that the building and maintenance of roads and sewer infrastructure is very pricey. So that's scenario C. Scenario B, you'll see a lot more growth going out here in Eagle Mountain, not so much south. Scenario D, we reversed it, not so much going in Eagle Mountain, but some going south. And then the smallest urban imprint, this urban infill, scenario D, and you can see the urban footprint there. So a couple of things going on. This is how people voted. We had 11,000 people, as I mentioned, weighed on this. In the blue is that 11,000 people, how they weighed in on it. So a lot of support for B, a lot of support for C. B was centers, C was westward. A lot of support for the infill. Not as much for D, which was south, and not as much for A, which is based on the last 20 years. But another thing going on here in the red, we went ahead and, because we're not to, we paid Lighthouse to do a random sample survey to verify these results. You know, surveying is hard work. It's very easy to bias things. So we went ahead and had Lighthouse verify the survey. So the good news is that across the board, there were very, very few differences in public versus the random sample. So interesting survey result there. What are we going to do with all this information we've got? We're going to take that with all the other scenarios that topic areas, maybe water, air quality. And we're going to put together goals and strategies into a vision document. So this is the high level version. This vision is going to talk about convenient transportation choices, both in terms of roads and in terms of public transportation. It's going to talk about housing options. We know there's a housing crisis. I would hate to be a young kid getting out of college right now trying to afford a home. My own kids will probably live in my basement until they're 30, but we'll talk about that later. This is about open space. I know that's really important. You guys have got great amenities right next to the canyon here. I come from Cottonwood Heights to recreate in your canyon. Hopefully you don't mind me driving your roads. But and support for local agriculture. We will have 42 strategies in this document about how a farmer or a rancher as an option, you know, number one, you know, there's obviously property rights involved here, but it's 42 strategies about how they could preserve and protect their agriculture. So then it's about clean air, clean water, and then about educating our kids so they're ready for the future. So that's kind of a very high level. Happy to dig into or answer any questions that you might have.
Is that published somewhere where people can view these results and
ValleyVision.org, you can see all the results in detail. This is still in draft form, what we've been doing, just like we came and talked to you and Chandler. We've been going to all, every city, city manager, mayor, council, and this is the draft at this point, so we are trying to, so if you have feedback or you're saying, you know, this is really important, this is Cedar Hills, we are more than happy to incorporate it. But ValleyVision.org, you can find every single presentation and result that we've done over the last 2 years.
Okay, and I think there was an op-ed in the engineer a little bit, you know, Jeremy even wrote about this process.
Yes, and also, if you don't know Kurt's Blair, I don't know, he's a brand new head of the Utah Valley Chamber, so we'll probably get to know him, so. But yeah, there was an op-ed. Well, if there's not any other questions, I appreciate your time on the agenda tonight. And, yep, and if you do think of any, I call them away homers, if you think of any on the way home, we're going to be in Utah, Harvick, and we're in Utah.
All right. Thank you. This is an important project. We are going rapidly, and like in the Cedar Hills is not. We recognize that everywhere around the state doesn't still impact our residents and our community. So we appreciate the time and effort that groups are putting to ensure that this road is being planned for in a way that that prepares for the future, but maintains what we love about Utah.
That's exactly right. Maintain what we love about Utah County. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that the only item on the agenda for work session other than reviewing? Okay.
Just the bills that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mayor, Council, we're.
I can decide between 7 and 8.
I'm trying to vote.
In work session? All right, let's start with 7.
I have to figure out what 7 is then.
Lone Peak Lofts.
Lone Peak Lofts, okay. Here's the bag. Lone Peak Lofts.
That's an awesome picture.
Problem is he's cute, he knows it.
Thank you.
So Lone Peak Lofts is a mixed-use subdivision that's being proposed. It's down behind Walmart. It's on that corner piece that's adjacent to the roundabout, about 4600 West Woodward Drive and Cedar Hills Drive. And you can see that the project, it's actually kind of hard to see the project. But the project consists of basically three structures. The two structures to the south, this one and then this one, are the mixed-use portion. On the ground floor, there's a commercial use. There's two units. There's two commercial units in each building. And then on the second floor of both of these buildings, there is above each commercial unit, there's two apartment units. So each building has four apartments and two commercial units, if that makes any sense. And then up here to the north, you have four townhomes. So a total of 12 residential units. This is our first mixed use proposal that we've ever had in the city in terms of trying to comply with our 10-6A code that when we adopted it in, well, we revamped it in 2016, adding for mixed use to be allowed in this sub-district of the zone. But at the time, it was a little different. It was the PD1 zone where the Cedar Canyon did not exist. And so we have this one little piece that's still the mixed use sub-district. Anyway, the proposal has the 12 units. The density allowance in this sub-district allows for 8 units per acre. This site is an acre and a half. And the traffic flow on it is, there's only one entrance that they'd be creating off of Redwood Drive right here. The other entrance to the property would be tying into the existing cutout Walmart. There is, in Walmart's development agreement already in place, the allowance for whoever comes here to use that cutout. So that's already in place. So this is just the layout. Does anybody have any questions about the layout of the proposal itself? So let's talk about the concept. They really wanted to do something that was more modern architecture, but still combined with the colonial aspect. And a lot of times when we say colonial, we really mean brick, make it red brick, and put some other aspects on the building. So they really named them red brick. They do have, the windows are, they do have these black frames, so it does give it kind of a modern look. The Planning Commission really liked the layout of the commercial buildings. The Planning Commission did not see the layout of the residential buildings, so I'm going to show you those right now. So they took, these weren't ready at the time, these came in last week. So you can see, this is what they would look like from the street. So the townhomes would be accessed, the front porches would be fronting onto 4600 Redwood Drive, and then they'd be rear entry garages. So on the back end is where they drive in. But from the front, this is all you can see, is on these homes. And once again, they've gone with a real brick architecture. Whether it's colonial is up for you to decide, but then from the back you can see that there are, maybe it's a little hard to see, but there are garages for each unit as well as doors. Something that they had mentioned that is not being shown in this picture is, go back to the flat. They show, parking's always an issue when we talk about development. Each of these townhomes has its own two-car garage, as well as a driveway that can park another two cars. But what you're seeing right here is really one big driveway for these two townhomes and then one big driveway for these two townhomes. Last time we spoke with him, they were actually going to split those driveways up just so there wasn't this shared driveway that creates problems with neighbors. So there was supposed to be about a 2-foot gap in between these. I'm not seeing it in this elevation, but it's really not up to the architect to make that determination. So, but that's something we will see, to kind of break up that monotony of just one giant room. Other than that, if I go back to the site plan, I believe there were approximately 45 parking stalls. And there were two ADA ones. So you see two ADA stalls here, and you see another couple of stalls, and then we have stalls up and down. When I spoke with him a couple weeks ago, I said, put as many parking stalls as you can. Don't underpark this, put as many as you can. And the reason that is that we don't know what is the use here, right? They're really trying to make these commercial units as empty and as design-friendly as possible. So there's really not even going to be a floor inside of them. So they're going to be stuck with everything. And so if you're the first tenant, you can walk in and say, okay, I want you to pull this sewer line over to this corner so the bathroom's over there. We're not choosing where the bathroom is for them, is what he's thinking. So that the initial occupant has just maximum flexibility in terms of what they're doing with the space itself. But with that, it's kind of a double-edged sword in that where we don't know what it is, it's hard to gauge parking needs. So you could have a use that comes in that has a really high parking requirement. Let's say it's a
Pilates class.
Let's say it's a Pilates class, and 5 to 9 o'clock every night, they need 25 stalls, right? And that's just for one, maybe two of these commercial units. Well, the next use that comes in has to fit within the remaining parking that's left. And so you might be really limited in what you can do. We do encourage the shared parking. So, the tenants that are, so if you have a daytime use, let's say you have a small little boutique that opens up in one of these, and their hours are from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Well, the demand for parking for the residential uses above these commercial pads will probably offset the demand for commercial uses, right? So the commercial uses will be demanding it during the day, and the residential will probably be demanding it more at night, as they'll be going to the places.
So those residential units above the commercial don't have.
They don't have right
garage, parking or.
So that's why it's key. That's why the parking aspect of this is key to the discussion.
Looks like you fit more parking spaces somehow.
Let's get into that. Because they could, but there is an open space requirement. So they have to have 30% open space for the dump, that's just for the code. But where there's a residential component, the open space can't just be scattered all over parking, or scattered all over parking aisles and little park strips. 75% of it has to be contiguous and usable for the people that live there. So almost like a yard. So this section, all this right here and up here, that's all going to be grass landscaping, also a retention basin, but it's usable area for the people that live there. So that's the challenge you have to overcome. That's why I was telling you, maximize your parking as much as you can. So.
Didn't we just have a discussion about open space, and we felt like there could be flexibility if we left, you know, because there's nothing worse than leaving little strips of parkway and trees.
We did, and the Planning Commission has talked about it, and I believe they've made a recommendation, and they're not recommending changing the 30%. And I want to commend the developer here, because this is not an easy little piece to design and build.
Around for a long time.
It's been around for as long as Europe's been around, yes. Nothing's ever been there. And really, the only other thing that's ever been proposed there is a skate park. But when I sat down with him, I went through the rules, and he came back with a proposal that actually checked the boxes. So they've done a good job in kind of taking what the code says and building what's available there. But I was surprised, because usually the 30% requirement is, it's a difficult requirement to meet for a lot of developments, and they've managed to do that, and doing it in a meaningful way. Even the open space between buildings, so you have open space here and open space here, there's code that the gaps between buildings are too narrow, and the open space there doesn't count because it's not usable. Well, he's spread the buildings out as far as he can in order to use that open space and have that count for their calculations. So, there could be a couple other parking stalls. They are beyond their 30% requirement for landscaping, so there could be some that they could capture. These will come back. On the north side, I don't know if they could do some diagonal stalls here, but they'd have to probably work out something here, because I don't know if they could fit it. Otherwise, they'd have to look at this width and maybe cut off some open space on the north side of the building. They could play with it, I guess is what I'm saying, but they do have to keep some of these widths available for public safety to get in and out of the facility.
Remind me, as far as code goes, is it only 10-6 that applies to this area? So 10-5 does not apply to it.
Which portion of 10-5?
So I'm just looking at the parking, and 10-5-11 says off-street parking required. Not less than 2 off-street parking spaces shall be required for each single family dwelling. Said off-street parking shall be not less than 10 feet by 20 feet per space, and parking spaces shall be enclosed within the garage.
Yeah. But 10-6-8 has its own parking requirements for the commercial zone. But in the off-street parking, we've always considered that the driveways. The driveways always end up with 2-car garage, so that's 2.
But as far as the units above the commercial.
Yeah, so I've looked at this in terms of the plans 10-6-A, which does not require, it used to require covered parking, and it does not.
So 10-5 does not apply to this stuff.
I don't believe so, but that's just my interpretation.
And where are the design guidelines?
10-6-A.
10-6-A.
5? Mm-hmm. I'll say. 5. So go there fast.
I'm just looking more as a colonial style. So high pitched violently groups, either side people pitch over from the front side and across the fabric. Central door, often the French door is sided by work areas on the side, so we use it also Sunday front and key doors. Traditional colors going down. I know that that's kind of interesting. We haven't been assured on that on other buildings, so maybe. It just doesn't feel like a very colonial building.
Yeah, and that was the feedback that I was probably just going to give you, Kim, is that there's probably got to be some architectural element that you've got to add or change that just kind of make it tie in with the other buildings around it. It's not just, we appreciate the red brick, but it's probably not enough. There's got to be something else. Look at the Lexington Heights, they've got some copper elements, they've got some other kind of design, they've also got, what's that?
We're about Sway.
Yeah, or Taco Bell.
Sway, I mean, they've still done some of the other things, there's wainscoting on the bottom, but they've done other things that kind of tie into the buildings around them.
I would never describe them as colonial.
No, and that's, I think that's kind of the problem, even our Walmart is not.
It's got the pitch roofs and those.
It's got the pitch roofs, yeah. But it's, well, it's only decorative pitches, so
yeah.
We could ask for, hey, maybe we've got to have some sort of decorative pitch, but it's ultimately a flat roof.
I do not hate this design.
I really like it.
I like it, and I think it actually, fits into the scheme of what we have going on without being cookie cutter for everything else. It complements what we have going on. I don't think it needs to look exactly like everything we have. This is a unique structure, and that it's, commercial and residential. It's different than the other things we have. I don't know why it can't look different. It can, just would not fill in our code.
Yeah,
we can figure out how to help it go with the code without destroying this architectural design. I don't know.
Kind of have specific elements that we can point to, but
yeah, that's what I was just reading. High pitched flatly roofs, either side gable or pits, or in front facade, central door that's often the French door that's sided by large windows on the sides. You have a classic tunnel front or complete pillars. External exterior construction is normally a brick in traditional colors like red and brown, and makes use of substantial exterior moldings. Wrought iron or copper accents are also used. So there are some, specific examples in here that we can look at.
It's got a couple of levels. I mean, the windows,
and the iron armings over the doors. That's amazing.
There's some aesthetic on the wrong.
And the brick. And the entry doors to the business look like French door types.
I think where you're not seeing the wainscoting is on the townhomes. They look like they're all right.
Yeah, I think the townhomes especially are where, you see, all you see really is there's sole course of brick at the bottom to break up the facade a little bit, but really it's just straight brick.
Yeah, I think that that's something.
Have you ever been afraid of homes? You know that is for these homes are very modern.
Yes. When I spoke with the designer of these, that's his MO.
And it's incredible work if it's to your case. It looks like it's been scaled back a little bit. My personal opinion is that the colonial style is a little bit dated, but we still want the consistency in our community. I think that this unique code is fresh, it looks high end to me. I think it's going to enhance the area better than an open lot.
How many elements does it have to have?
I don't disagree if you want to change that colonial requirement. I just think we should do it the right way and change our quote unquote the hearing process and not just be allowed to decide what to make and why.
You have to be careful though with that because we've made every developer jump through these hoops and you're looking at colonial. And something I think that really have to just stick with is Brick Expo. They've spent a lot of money, and that's, there's a lot of money in building that facade for the buildings, and to acquire them and not others. I don't hear that, I'm just pointing it out, but that consistency, I think, is important to maintain.
Is it because it's in the particular zone? Because we don't force residences.
No, it's all because it's in the SC1 commercial zone.
Yeah, most of that is my friends just for that, so. I guess my only question is, like, to me, it seems to fit in with the brick, being with, just from the brick aspect. Is that enough? I mean, do we have to have every element, or do we get to decide what we think is colonial, or do we just look at those elements and say, we see three or four of those elements, and that's good enough?
It does not have to have every element, because to my knowledge, there's not every building, I don't know if any building has colors. Any building have colors, does Jake Bank have colors?
Now, some of them have coined corners on the nation.
I think they've all done that.
I think it's different parts.
Parts hasn't.
Coin corner?
The white brick on site, or what is it?
Yeah.
Well, maybe they do.
They have it. Parts has it. I think Swin may be the only one that doesn't have it.
It's my understanding that the council can make that call, and just knowing from personal experience, having gone through some of these approvals, it was interesting how many people were upset that we allowed Walmart to paint that whole small area blue, because they felt like we violated our own code. So I would anticipate people who care about that are going to want to know why it doesn't match more of the area there. And like I said, I don't think the council necessarily has to speak at a certain number of these. It looks less colonial than what's there now. And if you want to change that, I think that's fine. I just think it would be a more fair process to allow a public hearing process. So we just changed this in 2015 when we did the blue line. And we went through that public hearing process and said this is what the requirements are going to be. So it wasn't that long ago that we put this together.
It wasn't. And there may be just some smaller elements that we can come back with and change that maybe will allow them to get in better with the surrounding area. So I mean, you look at these roofs on the townhomes, and it appears that they're the kind of metal roofing, and maybe like, hey, you don't want metal roofing, you want to fit in with roofing specifically, say, a slate roofing. And it could be something as simple as that.
I don't think it's unreasonable to change code as architectural styles change too. I mean, we were developing here in the 70s to be the ugliest city in the nation. And so I think it's okay to keep up on what's happening as far as architectural trends without changing the fundamental basics of what we have in our city.
Yeah, I think if we can find, my opinion is, if we can find elements that are in those other buildings, so that we're not saying Walmart, you have to comply, and now everybody else has to comply. I think if we can find those elements, we can still do this, a little more towards.
And maybe we're getting too hung up on the word colonial. It does say that in the code, but I mean, if you really look at our buildings, you go to old-time Boston, deep south colonial buildings, it doesn't look a lot like that. Mm-hmm. So I think the intent was there, but it's very difficult to have a colonial Taco Bell or a colonial Swiss, if I'm being quite honest. And so that's why the brick element becomes very important to emphasize, because that's probably the biggest cost as a developer. And so they've done that, but maybe the problem is also with our interpretation of the itself.
There was a shift from colonial to something more specific, red-brick style buildings.
Industrial.
No, we can still keep. We can still have consistency.
So to this tonight, one of the things that they've done is the developer here, he's not, I don't believe he's a big developer, and so his design will just put a lot of money into each development. He's got to have some assurances there. But what's something he hasn't done that other developers have when they've gotten to this point is they usually have submitted a civil set to the city showing all of their utility arrangements, all of their gradient plan, their SWIP, everything. It's a whole civil packet that, that the engineer, Jeff, and myself will have reviewed at this point. It's a huge commitment, and so he has not done that. He's saying, I just need to know that there's buy-in for the idea itself before I go and invest all that money in doing that. And so I think that's what he's looking for, is preliminary approval. And so there could be some, so let me ask you this. Is there an opposition to the use that's being proposed?
No.
No. So if that, I think that's the message that needs to be shared. We're very comfortable with it. Things that we're concerned about, and I have concerns, and it's really, the parking is a concern, and it's not a concern because I think you're short X number of stalls. I just think that it's tight, right? And then I've met with the neighbors. There were some neighbors when we sent out our public hearing notices, and their little postcards 300 feet around that the neighbors got me. There was a neighbor that lives a little bit to the north here that was, she wasn't able to come to the city, so I went down to her house with her and sat down in the kitchen with Gretchen and walked her through the project. But she was very concerned about the traffic. And the traffic concern is actually, in what I was hearing from her, it's actually a current concern. It's not a future concern. She said, I see kids driving to high school there, and some of them are concerning, and some of them are, sorry, we can't do anything about kids on motorcycles, but if kids are speeding on motorcycles, we can do something about that. But from 7:45 or 7:20 to 8 o'clock from Cedar Hills Drive, starting from 4600 West, the roundabout, up to the light, it can become quite backed up. And so the question is what does this project do to that traffic scenario? Now, this is a problem that I believe is currently existing. It's not something that, hey, this is a problem we're seeing your development causing. It's a problem that's already there. And with all the development from Cedar Canyon and to the south there, it's only getting worse. And so Jeff and I have reached out to Bowen Collins about possible traffic evaluation from the roundabout up to North Grand Boulevard and saying what design elements should we start thinking about? What modifications do we need to start talking about in terms of this road in order to help facilitate traffic flow and be a little bit better? And that's for people queuing up to turn south on the North County, that's a problem. People that are trying to get from the Walmart parking lot across to 4700 in that development, that's a problem. And then they're backing up to the roundabout, that's also a problem. So we're going to be probably reaching out to, Bowen Collins does not have a traffic engineer on staff, they did provide some recommendations. So we're going to be reaching out to those people to say, hey, help give us a bid on walking us through designing and helping us solve some problems. But that was the concern I heard from the neighbors. But like I said, my interpretation of that is that it was an existing concern, and they saw that this would possibly increase that. I don't believe, if I'm looking at site plan here of this project, really difficult to see, but I'm going to zoom in on it. It's this piece right here, right? And the resident that I met with lives up in this neighborhood. With the homes here and the commercial here, I don't believe most of your traffic is going past this point. There will be some because it is a Cedar Hill service, so you will have some internal traffic that comes into the project from residences. But the majority of your traffic on this project ends right here. Anyway, that was a concern I heard, but Mary, I know that they reached out to you, so if I'm missing anything here.
The only other concern that I've heard, and I know this is existing issues, this is going to become another outlet for Walmart, which is probably a good thing to some extent, but it will bring a lot of more traffic through here. People just cutting through to get out if you want to go east. Instead of trying to turn out of Walmart, where the only place you can turn east exists now.
Yeah. So if I live right here, I'm not turning here to get home. I'm coming out here.
Yeah,
Or even if you live where I do, it might be easier to turn right on Redwood and get to the roundabout than it is to turn left where that mess is right now. So it may push some people through there, and then Redwood Road, but this is also in such a short period of time. Redwood Road becomes a little bit congested in the morning too. It's low peak traffic, and it's kids that are coming from the Cedars. Apparently they come down that way to get to the roundabout. So people, I could envision some high school kids also cutting through there to avoid the roundabout to get to school faster. So we may see some, it's like 20 minutes every morning. So I
now I see more issues for the people that are going to be living in the new thing than I do for the current residents.
Yeah.
I think both things will happen. People will cut through the lower and kids will go through there so they can get around the roundabout. Ahead of them, right? So I see more of them complaining than really changing. And I see her concern that it's also an empty lot. Something's got to go there, and something's going to create traffic. So.
And I don't think she was saying don't develop. She was wanting to know, as a city, are we looking at these potential traffic issues and what are we going to do? And that's what we're trying to say. Yes, we're hiring somebody. We recognize, especially at that intersection where David Weekly's going in,
this right here,
that's going to become a huge problem. Because you've got people coming from all four directions trying to go all four different directions.
And it's, quite frankly, it's too close to this light to put in a four-way stop. It's, you can't put another light in. It's, so there's got to be something else there. It might be, I don't know. I'm a traffic engineer.
I think she just mostly Railed wanted up. To know, are we looking at
Railed it?
If we're putting more stuff here, are we looking at it? I'm sure.
But I think for every school, I mean, you're in the CC, the same thing at Cedar Ridge, you see it at Deerfield, I mean, people, that's how it is when schools are there to start.
It's not all day, it is just a small chunk of time.
And I don't think there's anything traffic-wise you can do to fix that.
There may not be anything to alleviate that time period. So to me at least, the bigger concern is if I'm just going down, like I went down to Walmart today, 3 o'clock, and can I get out of the parking lot? Today I was fine, but I have seen that parking lot, you know, back up quite a ways.
Which this could help with it, because again, if you don't want to turn left or east, that's your drive, you can cut through here and turn right and you can round it out.
Well, and to that point though, I still don't think that's going to increase traffic.
No.
If I live up here and I cut through here, I'm already going down there anyway. But if I'm you and I'm going to go out this and down to the roundabout, I don't enter a neighborhood. So.
Yeah.
But I live in those townhomes.
So that's the thing. So the townhomes are going to be on HOA because we require that same ones that all your residential has to be in HOA. But at some point, they may want to consider some speed bumps or traffic warning devices through that parking lot. But I think
that's a good point. They actually may want to put one in right now. Because otherwise, you will get the swilling tire racing. I'm racing my friend going around the roundabout and I cut through the parking lot here. I lied, we're not going to take it.
So what?
So
we can come back to this in the next session. My only recommendation really would be, if you use the MACRS code, parking MACRS code, I would recommend that they add a few more colonial aspects until we change our code.
I want to be a super well, and that residential portion could use a little something. It does look pretty stark.
I think the confusion for me though is what do we actually say to them if we don't, if our code does not say 2 to 3 elements or, you know, right, 3, I mean, and if they say we've got brick, how do we say, just don't feel like that's colonial enough?
That's a good point. But what we've said in the past is, and developers have always been pretty receptive to it, is that, you know, it does specifically say colonial in our, and we're looking at this and saying, we like it, it just doesn't look colonial. I mean, it's got a lot of the aspects, but there's something missing here that's not colonial. And just look at our code and look at your buildings and say, what can we change it?
I remember, I think it also basically says that it needs to match the existing surrounding buildings.
Yeah.
That there is something about
it. I think I recall that. It's hard to remember what was actually written on the graph. Like when you, Darren, you brought up the covered parking, I couldn't remember why we made that, made the final letter.
Yeah.
It must not have, but I remember in our response to the blue line, it was in there. So he's changing. And we can change it again. But we should just go through the process and do it.
I think he's really, what he's looking for tonight is thumbs up saying, hey, we're going to support this project. You've got some things to overcome, but, before the design.
Oh, let me reach you real quick.
Who is the applicant again?
His name is Dustin Cutler.
Councilmember Ellsworth said, for the preliminary plat for Lone Peak Lofts, I just recommend that some sort of visual separator be put in place between the townhomes and the businesses in that small bit of open space, either bushes or a wall, whatever could show that those are different purpose buildings and still look good, other than that, right?
Let's look at that real fast. And let's go back to my comment of, I feel like we've done a really great job in terms of reading our code and making it compliant. So our landscape code for this is pretty extensive, but and this has actually changed. We want to do more of a patio roof here, like a pavers, and I think that will tie those two commercial units together, kind of identifying them as that this is a kind of, honestly, courtyard, for lack of a better word, we call it a courtyard of that business. So if they put in a grease separator, let's say they have a little deli in one of these, then they can put some tables out there. It'd be a nice little area. This one, they do have a bit of vegetation that they're planning on planting a big area of turf and then surrounded by bushes and trees. So I think they've done a really good job of saying, here's what your landscaping requirements are, and I'm in compliance with that.
I actually don't mind it because these are homes on the tops, and those are homes, So I don't think it were purely commercial.
I
feel differently, but I like
them
a little bit because those are still homes.
Yeah. I would hate to put in a wall there. I think it just looks a lot of place.
Also, would comply with their asking requirements with it.
No, I you can't make it a little more order.
The wall of trees.
Hedgerow.
Yeah. I didn't have a conversation with him, but just to clarify, he understands that when he's ready to bring uses in on that commercial.
They're coming back to approve, yes.
But and he may get a rejection if the parking isn't
yes.
a match.
Yes, I've sent that to him in an email.
Okay.
Just, as a concern, we talked about it in the Planning Commission meeting in August, September ago. We talked about it in the meeting, and I sent them an email with some feedback. I'll be here tonight, and I'll bring it up again. But that's the limitation with parking. Is if you get four, he's one of the uses he's really said. I'll be brief. I'll use one too, but one of the uses that he's really emphasized is kind of a transition. We have a lot of home-based businesses in the city, and we've had a number of them that have outgrown their home for a business, and they wanted to look for something local that they can transition to a brick and mortar commercial use. And there just has not been anything available. We've had a dance studio, we've had a bike barn, we've had, but they've looked for commercial uses and haven't been able to find them. So that's why he's saying, look, I have a blank slate for here for you to come and tell me what you need it to be, and then we can make it be whatever you need it to be. And so the owner of that commercial business will also own two units on top. And that'll help pay the rent. So it makes the business a little bit more viable in the long run.
So they buy it, they buy the entire unit.
They buy the stack, yes. Uh-huh. And so they can rent out the apartments and help make the business and the needs successful. Uh-huh. It's a unique idea, and I don't believe it's been done around here at least. We do have some commercial at top, residential below, but I don't know that it's been done quite. But this is a little bit. Anyway, that's all.
Okay.
If there are any questions?
I'll take a motion from Councilman Durkin for session.
I move that we adjourn our session. I should give a pass for Adams. Is there a second? I'll second. Councilman Durkin, in favor?
Aye.